Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. We're so excited you decided to join us. Before we jump in today, go down, leave a review in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We do love those, and they help a ton. They do. That's a free way of kind of helping us out. Another way of helping us out is to help our sponsors. So first of all, Dr. Dish, if you're thinking of getting a team that wants to shoot the ball better and consistently put that round ball into that cylinder, check out Dr. Dish. Mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. If you're looking for a one-stop shop, if you're looking to become a better basketball coach, if you're looking for a mentor, if you're looking to talk to me on a regular basis, right, James? Then you can become a teachhoops.com member, and I'll put you on the bat phone and we'll take care of your specific needs. So come over and check us out at teachhoops.com. Let's head off to the podcast. All right, Coach Unplugged, episode, I'm not even going to guess, Coach, it's over 1,000, if you can believe I've done over 1,000 podcasts.
That's awesome.
But I have a face for radio, so that's why I've done so many. Anyway, Coach Robinson, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, and you have, first of all, you're a Hall of Famer, but you have such an interesting basketball journey. When I was reading my show notes beforehand, that I just want you to share with the audience kind of your journey, how you started playing, you know, how it kind of led to being a professional player, and then what you're kind of doing now. So I'll turn it over to you, Coach Robinson, and you just kind of introduce yourself and then kind of take us on that basketball journey.
Okay. I'm Crystal Robinson. I went to Southeast Oklahoma State. I'm born and raised in Oklahoma. I started playing basketball at a very young age. Both of my parents were college All-Americans, JUCO college All-Americans. My dad went to college. He reclassified and went to college from the 11th grade from Louisiana.
Okay. They called me a nerd. Do you have any siblings?
Five.
Okay. Siblings. And did they all play?
Everybody played. My sister Brandy went to college. My sister BJ went to college and played, but she got pregnant. Now she's a real high up person in Choctaw Nation. She just okay. was the basketball manager. My sister Brandy played at Southwest Missouri State. Okay. And my brothers played in high school, but my sister Brandy has a 6'8" son who's was a top 30, and he just signed with Arkansas.
Okay.
In the SEC. Okay. He's a 6'7" two guard.
Well, that's what they're that
and I shot me, training.
When you look at the NBA draft, you know, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for those long, lanky players. So was it competitive? Were there competitive games in the house?
My dad passed away about 5 years ago. He played as a young child. He didn't play with me. When I got in high school, he played with me up until he was probably in his late 50s, early 60s, because he was a 6'8 two guard. My dad was really, really, really good. He played at K-State after he went. He didn't graduate, but he finished his career there. And he was probably my parents loved basketball. My mom still doesn't do anything. Like, she's in depression if basketball is not on TV. But
I know. I'm going to give away when we're recording this, but I just watched the Bucks beat the Heat. I don't know. You probably.
No, I haven't been watching.
Yeah. I mean, a last second shot in OT. It's like the Heat. The Heat is the Bucks' like Achilles heel anyway.
Yeah.
But I know. So if there's a game on, we always find it. I always find out that there's basketball families, and it sounds like you were in a basketball family.
That's definitely my family. So they bought me a Nerf Go when I was 5 years old, and I tore that thing up. They taped it up so much, and I really fell in love with basketball because I grew up in a really volatile situation, and basketball became my outlet. So every time I took my basketball at school, it was under my feet. I dribbled it to school, and it became my way to take my frustrations out. And all of the energy that I had that I didn't know what to do with, being an ADHD kid, I'd get on the court and just take it out on the person next to me.
I find that very intriguing too, because when I was growing up, and I was always a two guard, undersized two guard, but I was a two guard and could always shoot. It was the way I kind of just zoned everything out. I could go to the park. We were talking about this before, but I could go to the park and shoot and work on my game. And it was just like I was in my own little world and all the stresses and stuff left behind. And then when I came back home, I love that.
That's exactly what it was. And it just gave me the ability to channel my anger in a very positive way. So I just wasted that energy and played as hard as I could every second on the floor. And it just made me... It was a place of release, a place where I didn't have to think about nothing but things that made me happy. And it was, being successful.
I love that. Okay, so then you played in high school. Then what happened?
I played in high school. I played for 4 state championships. Didn't win one until I was a senior.
That was sweet, though.
Yeah, it was sweet. I mean, I guess you could say, but I should have won 4. That's how, when you're a competitive person and you look back. But I am very thankful how my high school coach didn't say, I have a great player and I'm just going to let you go. He taught me how to use my talent. Like, he kept me from just being a great athlete. That's the best thing I can say. I am number 4 in the efficiency book. If you look in sports efficiency in basketball, in the WNBA, I'm number 4. And I'm the only guard in that top 5. I didn't make mistakes. I didn't turn the ball over. I played 37 minutes a game now. But efficiency was just everything for me. And that's what I did. I just took it out on everybody else and played my balls to the wall. I hope I can say that, but I played as hard as I could possibly play. And that's what it's hard to teach people to play like that. You know, as a coach, when you have a talented player that just don't have an engine, and you, every day you see him, he's like, you got all that talent. If I could just snap you and throw it on that kid would be phenomenal.
I've coached, I probably have coached 10 to 12 professional players, and a couple have played in the NBA, but Wesley Matthews, who plays for the Lakers now, is probably the most successful one. And I say, you always have it. There's an it thing. I don't know, because the coaches will ask and they'll call about other players and I'll go, he's good. And they go, what does that mean? I go, he's good, but I'm not sure he's got it. Cause you can kind of tell when I knew Wesley when he was in 7th grade, Wesley had it. Wow. He had to work for it really hard and wasn't drafted and blah, blah, blah. But I think he's on his 14th year of his NBA career, but he had something that you just can't put your finger on. It's one of those things. I probably have coached players that have more athleticism and are probably just as good of basketball players, but they didn't, I'm not sure they had it. I don't know if anybody can ever figure out what that is. You're right, because it's that special thing, and it's what makes them. Yeah,
and most people probably think it has to do with talent. It doesn't have to do with talent. Mm-hmm. It has to do with this inner drive that's just a will to succeed. It doesn't matter what you throw at me. I'm gonna duck it, go around it, run through it, whatever I got to do, because success is my insight, and nothing's going to stop me from getting there.
Right. That's I tell people, I said, you look at the NBA and there's 300 and some players in the NBA. And I said, there's another 2000, they could be in the NBA.
Yes, but sir.
They didn't work enough. They'd rather go party with their friends. They didn't spend the time, blah, blah, blah. They just don't have – the difference between them and the ones that, that are playing isn't that big. But there's something there.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with you, and you can see it. Like, in kids when they're really, really young, you really can. Like, and hopefully – life doesn't change them, like their life situations, life circumstances. There's always extenuating circumstances to that, yeah, that can knock you off your path. You know what I mean? And people like you, coaches like you, coaches like me, that's what makes, to me, us so important and our job so valuable, because those kids are kids that we kind of keep in, and they value what we have to say. Someone else, like a teacher, could say the same thing to them that you say to them, but they're going to take it from you.
Right. Yeah, they run with it. It's yeah. So then, yeah. Where did you play? Where did you play in college?
I actually went to Louisiana Tech, which was a big powerhouse at the time. Oh, but yeah. I just really didn't feel like I fit in, and I left La Tech. And I actually was three. It was only three WNBA players that came from the NAIA, and I was a sixth overall pick, and I came from the NAIA.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, and I also played in the American Basketball League before the WNBA, and I was Rookie of the Year in that league. And you had Dawn Staley, Teresa Edwards, Katie Smith, some of the biggest names, Katrina McClain. I could just go Yolanda Griffin.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, okay.
All those people were in that league, and I averaged 20 and 10 in the league full of those people.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And what, so before we dive into your WNBA career, so what's your feeling on the WNBA? I have some feelings that
before I do that, I played only 3 years at Southeastern. In 3 years, I scored almost 4,000 points. And what was I about to say? I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
So I played 3 years at Southeastern. I went to 3 national championships. Didn't win any. I got beat by almost the same score 2 years in a row. Then fast forward to the WNBA. I played for 3 championships and didn't win one. Then I won one in WNBA as a coach. But I told you all that just to tell you that from coaching JUCO, I actually coached from third graders to pros. And I have won or played for a championship everywhere I've ever been as a coach or a player. And my best coaching time, I learned the most when I coached third through fifth graders.
I know, I'm telling you.
I had to learn how to communicate in a different way. And I think every coach should have to coach third and fifth grade, because it teaches you not to yell at people. It teaches you you can't really get them to do what you want if you're livid all the time. Now, is there time to be mad? Yes. But if you really want to get the best out of those kids, you have to work the hardest to be the best communicator. And for me, you have to be able to communicate with individuals, everybody. I know that everybody wants to say, well, we're going to treat everybody the same. In some aspects, yes, everybody's going to get the same treatment in the fact that I'm going to punish you if you deserve to be punished. But at the same time, if I got a 30-point score a game, I'm treating her a little bit different how she scores the ball than you. And getting people to understand, don't compare yourself. We are teammates. Your skill set builds this team just as much. You take away your skill set, we're going to lose too. But getting to me, that's how you convince kids to give up their.
Well, comparison is the thief of joy.
It is.
It's like Instagram. I tell my high school kids that all the time. I said, stop it. It's like no one lives the life you're seeing online. So stop it. Comparison is the thief of joy. But, and also it's like, there's a reason a person scoring 20 points a game and I'm getting them shots. It's like, sometimes it's not. Yeah. So some of those.
At the same time, what you're saying is that then there's players that's complaining. I'm like, you couldn't score 20 points a game if I gave you 15 shots. So why are you complaining? And I'm very.
I say you couldn't score 30 points in an empty gym with a ball. Like, stop it. So, you know.
Yeah, like stop. And then at some point, you know, when you get to the younger kids, the kids are not the problem. The parents are.
You're probably. Yeah. Bobby Knight always said the best job in the world is in an orphanage. That's what Bobby Knight always said. Hey, everybody, hope you're enjoying the podcast. Please subscribe and like no matter where you listen to podcasts, whether you're jogging, walking the dogs, walking the kids, playing at the pool, go over and subscribe. Apple would be great. 5-star. If you're going to do a two-star, don't do it. Spotify or wherever you listen. We would also love if you went over to teachubes.com. It's what allows us to keep the lights on here and keep things a chugging. So go over and check that out. 14-day free trial. You know, everyone's got to work on their game and their craft. Come over and help us. And then the last thing is, if you're thinking of looking for other podcasts, go over and check out High School Hoops and Teacher Side Gig. Those are two other ones. And we might have a fourth one in the tank, but we'll tease you on that one. All right, let's head back to the podcast. and there's some truth to that. I want to circle back to the elementary, because when my son was coming up and my daughter was coming up, I coached theirs teams. And the thing is, you have to break the game down into the minutiae at that age.
Yes.
Like, it's like, if you can teach a third grader, I could coach the Bucks. Here you go, Giannis. Bye. You know, it's like,
yeah,
they have very good coaches. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, it's like, those guys are,
coaching at that level. It's psychology. I've done it both. Most of those players have their own personal trainers they're playing with.
Right.
You coach them in the game time thing, but they're getting their training somewhere else. What you have to do as a facilitator, as a head coach in the pros, because you have to make people put their egos to the side and get along and put out fires. Now, do you have to be good at X's and O's? Yes. But as a head coach, I could hire you with all your talent and let you be the X's and O's coach, take the credit, and both of us is going to get something good out of it. Phil right. Jackson did it forever with Tex.
Right.
With the triangle offense.
Right. And he did it with that. And he was a psychologist.
He was a psychologist. Yeah. Yeah.
And he put out all the brush fires. I know it's funny. It's like, everyone should have to do that. So I want to talk to you about the NBA. Cause from a former player, this is a
NBA father, or the WNBA, which one? You said NBA.
Well, we can talk about the NBA, okay. I want to know, as a father of a daughter, the WNBA is a second class citizen, and I think it's horrible. I think the women should be just making as much money as the men. I don't think they get the PR, and I think some things are changing. I mean, you couldn't even buy a jersey 5 years ago with someone's name on it.
You could. You just don't have them. That you have to go. They're not everywhere. Like,
right.
It's business. It's bar business. You don't put product on shelves in cities that you don't have a team. Like,
right.
It's a bit in all of its business. Like, and you can't have more money if there's not fans that's buying tickets. Right. So for me, the WNBA's problem is their marketing strategy. And yes. I'm in Dallas, right. Dallas, and we play in Arlington. If you go over to DeSoto, no, DeSoto's right. closer to Arlington, but you go away from there, 45 miles, and they don't even know the Dallas Wings exist. So how can you? Grassroots marketing has to be better in the WNBA.
It has to be better. It has to be better. And the thing is, Texas is like its own country. Like,
it is.
They should be 40, everywhere.
Everywhere. And you know, every weekend in Texas, there's a gym with 60 courts in it that has 100,000 people in it. We have no presence there. So, right. And that's not even costing a lot of money to market to do that. That's a cheap way to market. And then right. The other thing I think is one of the biggest problems in the WNBA is the fact that they keep trying to market to 28 to 35 year old men. Like, for me, it's time to go out and target the women that sit in the seats, challenge them. You go to any NBA game, you go to any hockey game, you go to any baseball game, there's women in those stands, whether they're there with the man that's making them be there, but they go to games. They should be spending their dollars to support women. If right. you really want to support women and grow women, for me, I'm just tired of begging 28, 35 year old men that could never beat me in basketball, come right. watch me play. I really don't care if you come watch me play or not, because you can't beat me anyway. But you have the most ridicule toward me.
Right. And the thing is, what they're not thinking about is, like, they should be marketing to all these girls are playing at AAU and pretty high levels.
Yeah.
And it's like, why aren't you there? Why aren't you in those gyms?
That's EYBL. Nike is a big sponsor. Why isn't the WNBA in some kind of situation or partnership where they are at every EYBL event? You
right.
know what I mean? I'm not a business person, but I'm not. And maybe there's rules that I don't know that prevents that from happening. Maybe there's an ignorance on my part to something, but sometimes things just seem so simple
Right.
But we make.
And I think what happened this year with the weight room and the NCAA women's is a tip of the iceberg.
Well, that
is, it is. It's the tip of the iceberg. The NCAA is like most state associations. It's like, come on, you're making billions of dollars, and you should also be marketing. It's like, and don't let's not fool ourselves. You're basically a minor league for the NBA and for the NFL and for the in sports. And it's like, until they start giving back. Anyway, I could get on a soapbox about this for a long time, but you're right. I think it's a marketing issue. It's not a game issue, and it's not a product issue.
The product is getting better and better. More girls are able to dunk now. More girls, like, you're from Wisconsin. Arike Ogunbowale is a whole different animal as a basketball player. You have to bring three to the ball every time, or Arike is going to torch you.
Right.
Now, as good as Diana was, you could stop Diana with a double team.
Right.
But Rike, you have to almost pre-rotate that person. And soon as that ball's thrown back, you got to be there. Or Reeks can split. Like, she's just unbelievably good.
And to be honest with you, from an outsider watching, the women's NCAA games were better than the Final Four was better than the men's, with you.
Just if you like basketball, I just don't see why there always has to be a comparison. Like, for me, I'm a great basketball player, but I know I'm not a man. I know I'm not stronger than you. I know I'm not faster than you. I know I can't jump higher than you. I don't even compare myself to you, but why does my game have to be bad? I'm not in any competition with you.
Right.
Because I'm good doesn't mean that I think I'm better than you, but I'm good in my own right for a woman.
Right. Well, and I think I've had this discussion with my coaches. I think maybe we're a generation away. I think the girls that are playing now, when their families are, I think we might just be one. We just got to figure out. And you're right. I think they have to do a better job of marketing, and almost break off in some respects from the NBA. And I'm not sure what that entails, but.
They have actually, lots of teams that, like Seattle Storm, I won a championship with them. They don't have any affiliation with the NBA. The NBA team was about to cut them. A group of women bought them. And I tell you, that's the best, most solid ran organization in the league. The Lakers are not bad, but I'm telling you, those women in Seattle, they are reshaping everything. Things function differently there. They work at a high level. They sell out almost every game. Like, they have a great fan following, but they have got in that community and spent a lot of money and they've elevated Sue. Not that Sue Bird was not an unbelievable player, but their backing elevated Sue to the level she's at, to where now the ESPYs, if Sue goes to the ESPYs, they pay her $30,000 and send her a private jet.
Right.
You know, Sue has Sue's a different animal, but Seattle took the time to build that stardom for her. And it wasn't a fleeting stardom like in sports. You know, you get traded fast, you do this. They rooted in Sue Bird until they built what they wanted. But very few organizations are really doing it like that. To me, they're the Spurs of the WNBA.
That's a great comparison. That's a great comparison. So let's talk about culture building. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling on it? People always throw out culture a lot as a, I don't know, you know, every coach says, oh, we got to build culture. What does that mean to you, or the importance of it?
Well, to me, the culture is the bones of your organization. Culture shows up before the people do. Okay. Now I'm going to put this in perspective. Okay. Let's talk about the Lakers when Magic Johnson and all those guys were there. That culture was, you knew if they came in there, they was about to showtime you to death, and you hope you don't get embarrassed. Their culture preceded them. When you have a culture.
Were you a Lakers or a Celtic? I mean, I was, anyway.
I was a Pistons fan. I have to say it. I'm mad about it now, because I even wore Bill Laimbeer's number. When I found out what a big jerk he is, like, I'm ashamed, because he's not very nice to anybody, ever, hardly. Unless he's making a joke or making fun of you. So
when I grew up in the middle of the Lakers Celtics thing, and you had to pick one.
You literally had.
And at that time, I was probably, I liked them both because I loved, I'm a shooter. I love Larry's ability to shoot and the fact that he was a white guy. He didn't care. He didn't back down from nobody. He walked in there and he would talk trash to you and bust you up just like Jordan would. I love that about him, but you couldn't help but to love Magic's personality and, you know, what they built there. So for me, culture is everything. Culture precedes you, and culture also, when people adhere to the culture, you eliminate ego. So this is not how we do things here. Your ego won't work. And Spurs is a great example because Greg Popovich told me once, he loved Kobe Bryant, and Kobe was the best player he'd ever seen in a long time. But he said, I'd never bring him to my team because he doesn't fit my culture. I don't have a culture of an individual that's going to shoot the ball 40 times. That's not what we're going to do. I'm going to find my success in my culture. And I think it's important for coaches and organizations to define what your culture are. You know, the Pistons were the bad boys. You know, if you came to play them, you was probably about to fight or get beat up. That was their culture. You know what I mean? But then there's a whole culture of integrity, respect, how you carry yourself. All those things factor into one thing, and it's culture, and it precedes you, and it's how you.
That was an interesting era of the game. In that it was a very physical game at that.
Hard fouls, like Bill Laimbeer was killing everybody. Remember the Jordan rules? Like Jordan came in the lane, you slammed him on the ground.
Right.
You remember the Jordan rules? But it's just the culture to me is when you don't have a culture, people just come in and they're acting any kind of way. And then you have all these fires to put out. When they come into a culture that's really set and it's this way, you know, I'm adhering to the culture. You can find yourself somewhere else because that we don't do those things here. And that's how Seattle is. They have a culture. And if you don't fit that culture, you will not be there for very long. I promise you that.
I think it goes past Pop too. I think it's gonna be. I think that's so inbred in their. I mean, I think the Spurs are gonna be known for that for a really long time. Is what I'm trying to basically get out.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I would love to hear your take on culture because it's just to me. I played for the New York Liberty. We were kind of like the bad boys. Like we grinded out games. We didn't have a lot of prolific scores. But we defended the crap out of you. Like our games probably averaged 50 points, you know, and we kept ourselves in every game. If we were down four, if we were down eight or up down 8-10 within 2 minutes, we were probably going to win that game because our culture, we practice our late game stuff more than we practice anything.
Oh, I'm big one on late game stuff. I'm working on some situations.
College coaches still don't get me with that. Like when I'm an assistant coach for a college coach and I'm like, we should implement working on late games. They just look at me like I'm crazy.
Bro Ryan was the king of that. I'm telling you, he was the king of that. I know. We spent a lot of time in that in our program. So here's what I always think about culture is like, it's like, what do I want to be remembered for as a father or a husband? It's like, what do we want to be remembered of? It's like, I want someone to come and watch us that's never seen us play, and they're going to be able to tell what we are all about.
Yes, like, sir.
You know, it's like you could come into a gym in January in Wisconsin and you'd walk in and you'd see what we are about, like how people treat each other, about how we play the game, it's when the cameras are off. You know, are you doing the right thing is what I always tell my guys, mm-hmm. You know, are you?
Hey, everybody. If you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe, like, leave a review, jump up and down, run around your house, whatever you need to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.